free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains this energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to the Free Energy Now radio show. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net to see our past show and archives, as well as who we have coming in the upcoming shows. Today is October 15th, 2007. We have as our guest today, Gilles Saint-Hilaire of QuasiTurbine. This is a technology that can turn it's basically a Wankel-type engine, though there are some differences that we'll be talking about. Four-chamber Wankel-like engine capable of burning fuel using photodetonation in an optical combustion type. The design can be used also for an air motor, steam engine, gas compressor, or hot air engine or pump. So thanks for joining us, Gilles.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you to have me on the show today.
Well, tell us about this QuasiTurbine. I've seen the name come up quite often over the years. It's an efficient engine. How does it work, and what does it have to offer?
Basically, you see, what we have done about 15 years ago is to look at the piston engine and also the conventional turbine. And we try to make a list of the deficiency or conceptual deficiency of those engines. We couldn't find any list of those difficulties before. And we made a list of over 20 conceptual deficiency of the piston engine. And basically, one of the most serious deficiency is related to the fact that the piston uses one chamber to do all the strokes. You remember the four strokes of the piston engine?
Mm-hmm.
One is intake, compression, combustion, and exhaust. And if you do all those strokes with one single piston room, what happens is you do some cold strokes, intake strokes, and hot combustion stroke in the same chamber. And this is not very good because, in terms of efficiency, because the hot temperature destroys the efficiency of cold process, and cold process destroys efficiency of the hot process. So this was one of the problems. Another one is related to the crankshaft. Is with the piston, because you use a crankshaft, essentially the four strokes are the same duration in time, which doesn't make sense in terms of optimizing the operation of an engine. So this was essentially, basically, but we have, again, about 20 other conceptual differences, problem with the piston listed on our website at quasiturbine.com. But basically, this is major. And there is also one other limitation is, in the story of engine, people have been running on gas engine and they move to diesel engine for more efficiency. And one of the reasons they did that is to have a higher compression ratio. But there is another major difference between the diesel and the gas engine is the intake vacuum. In a gas engine, you have an intake line where you vacuum this line all the time because there are too much oxygen in the Earth atmosphere. And in order to make a proper combustion with gasoline. So what you do is essentially you vacuum the intake line. And something very few people know and will tell you is that using a car on a conventional, say, application or use of a car, about half of the energy of the fuel is essentially used to vacuum the intake line. And essentially, it's working again the atmospheric pressure. And this is major obstruction to have a more efficient engine. And In the diesel engine, you don't have that. You don't vacuum the intake line, but you have other problems related to the high pressure of the combustion system. So basically, it's around the deficiency of conventional piston engine that we have worked, and essentially we have looked how to improve that. I didn't say much about the quasi-turbine at this time, but could you, is that okay with the kind of, say, the problem that piston engine?
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and talk about the quasi-turbine and how it resolves some of those issues that you brought up with the piston engine.
Okay. So, essentially, in the quasi-turbine, it's basically a rotary type of machine. And one of the advantages of the rotary type of machine is that the hot process are occurring in one area of the machine, and the cold process are occurring in another area of the machine. This provide basically an improvement. So this is the kind of thing you should go on. Another point is, on a rotary machine like the quasi-turbine, is that essentially you can move the port position, and you can have a stroke which is longer and other stroke which is shorter in time or less duration, because all you need to do to get the stroke longer and shorter is to fix the angle that you want this process to occur. And basically, because you can do that, you don't lose as much time for intake, for example, or to exhaust, and you use better the time for propulsion, for combustion, and our process. So basically, the quasi-turbine is going into this direction. But the main point is, if you look at today's engine, you have the conventional turbine and you have the piston engine. Conventional turbine has only 1 degree of freedom. It's rotation. This is the only degree of freedom a conventional turbine has. And this imposes a problem because you cannot modulate the power easily. So conventional turbine is not used in car and trucks. One of the reasons is because it's a constant power machine. The piston engine uses 2 degrees of freedom. One is the up and down of the piston, and other degree of freedom is the rotation of the crankshaft. And both degrees of freedom are linked by a connecting rod. And this gives an improvement in some way, because you can, with the piston engine, you can more efficiently vary the power of the machine efficiently. In the quasi-turbine, we have 7 degrees of freedom. And in theory, this is the way to go if you want to optimize processes in a combustion engine or in any engine. You need more degree of freedom, which the designer can work and make the engine more efficient. So basically, the quasi-turbine is a rotary engine made of 4 blades, which are chained one another, which turn into this stator, and the stator is getting closer and further apart away, and in this, by moving away and toward the rotor, it's making variable volume chamber. This is basically what the quasi-turbine is.
One of the things from my perspective in looking at your drawings and your animations in this rotary turbine design, it seems that it would be difficult to turn the explosion or the expanding gas into rotational force. It's not a... whereas with a piston, for example, you can picture the downstroke, for example, being 90 degrees to the crank mechanism, so that you get a more direct conversion of the explosive force into rotational force. Is that a weakness of the quasi-turbine, is converting the explosive power of the gases into rotation?
This is interesting. My first comment is, a piston is a flow reversal machine. When the piston go down, the movement of the gas is going down, and the piston reverses, the gas reverses. Every time you reverse a flow, you're working against the flow and you get some obstruction. In a rotary machine, you're getting the flow around and you never reverse the flow, which is an advantage. But what you refer to is what are the force vector into the rotary machine. And this is more subtle to understand because it's based essentially on the Archimedes principle of an object that you put into the water, you get the force upward. And this force upward is independent of the shape of the object. And this principle applied to the piston and applied to the quasi-turbine where the blade or the piston surface essentially is penetrating into a fluid like water or a fluid like a gas and is getting its force back independently of the shape. And this is not an easy concept. A lot of people need to work on that and to find out really what is the origin of the rotative force. You said about the Wankel a minute ago. The Wankel and the quasi-turbine do get their tangential force from the Archimedes principle, where you have the blade or the piston trying to get into a pressure medium, which is like water on or underwater pressure or a gas pressure. Same principle apply. But the Wankel is a very different machine because they use a crankshaft. And because they use a crankshaft and essentially a rotor, they have 2 degrees of freedom, essentially like the piston. And the quasi-turbine has no crankshaft, eccentric crankshaft, I mean. So in the central of the quasi-turbine, central area, there is nothing there. It's empty. And the engine is turning around its empty center. And the reason there is no crankshaft is because the crankshaft is a limitation to 2 degrees of freedom. If you want higher degree of freedom, you need to remove the crankshaft.
How do you convert the rotation of the rotor into the into usable force, rotational force?
This is an interesting question. There is, contrary to what people may think, there are an infinite number of solutions to do that. We publish a couple into one of our book. We published in the patent different solution, and we use different solution. So for a total of about 10 different solutions that we have used, I would say, fairly difficult in terms of concept. You need to design a system to get the torque of the engine out. But once the design is done, it's a very simple to execute. It's a very simple mechanism to really to bolt and to get in action.
Now, in terms of actual performance, have you been able to build a combustion engine and get some numbers in terms of efficiency of gas to energy?
Okay. As you said, there are many applications for this kind of machine. One is if we get the pressure from an outside source or outside combustion chamber. And there are machines like that, like the rotary, like the turbine, where they have a combustion chamber, essentially, which is away from the engine, the turbine itself, and you get the pressure into it. But in the quasi-turbine, we have different concepts. One is based on the conventional type of engine that we use in our car, and this uses a quasi-turbine without the carriages. And we have a concept also for a much faster machine where the combustion process is much faster, which is called detonation type of combustion. And both engines, prototypes have been made, and research has been done and tested to make sure that those engines answer correctly or we have a correct comportment according to theory. But from there, we're not tackling any commercial product at this time. We just at the lab level, just like the windmill people have been or the fuel cell people have been for 50 years doing their work, making sure the fuel cell principle is good and work, but you cannot buy it, you cannot almost see it, you cannot deal with it at this time. It's not commercial. At this time, all we have is pre-commercial steam and pneumatic engine and rotary expander.
Is that used like with an air flow input?
Yes, it could. Yes. An expander, I could give you an example of a way you can use a rotary expander is gas pipeline industry that deliver the natural gas into your house. The national pipeline network use 1,000 PSI. But when they get to your house, usually they are under 200 PSI. Sometimes they are 30 PSI. So the pressure is going down, but nobody is recovering this energy, the pressure energy. Essentially what they do, they open a valve and they lose all the pressure energy. If this, they replace conventional valve by a rotary expander like the quasi turbine, the pressure will work against the rotor, make the rotor turn, and produce mechanical energy. And I know your program is entitled Free Energy, and this is a good example of the way that renewable energy is good, but free energy is better. And by taking this energy out of the pipeline, gas pipeline network today, you get essentially free energy. I mean, because the energy is there, except that nobody is harvesting that energy. And just using a rotary expander will do. In Germany, there has been a study of how much energy there is in the gas pipeline network done in 1996. And amazingly, they found the result that it's about 1,000 large windmill of 5 megawatt each. So this is a tremendous amount of energy. And what is interesting is all this expansion of the natural gas occur into the industrial park near your place, just where the electric consumption is needed, and does not occur far away on the top of a hill where the windmill is and need transportation and management for that.
Where does the pressure come from originally in the gas pipeline?
Yeah, the gas pipeline pressure comes from a set of gas turbine compressors that they are along the pipeline. And those units are very, very powerful compressor. And they compress the gas all the time to make sure that the gas is moving toward the users. As you get at the user point, you could recover the compressor energy, but people don't do it. One of the reasons they don't do it is because conventional turbine do not work nicely with variation of pressure. And this pressure in the gas pipeline vary during the day. During the night, it can go to 1,500 PSI. It can fall to 900 during the day. So the pressure in the pipeline is not constant. So you need a machine that work properly with efficiency with different pressure. And conventional turbine is not really the correct machine for that. Some test has been done, but essentially, basically, is because of the pressure variation over the day that the system are not in place today.
Are you in discussion with industry individuals in the gas pipeline industry to apply the quasi-turbine at this time, or is it premature for that?
We're not allowed at this time to disclose any relation, but neither with this industry or some other industry. But But interest is large, and I would say people who are doing or willing to doing or planning to do it, they don't want to share essentially their hedge with other people which are not doing it.
Right.
And they want to secure a technology for themselves. So this is also a typical difficulty of new technology. If it's good and interesting, people will tend to get the technology for themselves and will not release their results or their interest to the competitors to that. But this gets also to another aspect of it. It's storage, because you know you can store energy under by air under pressure, or like you have in Los Angeles area, you have liquid natural gas boat that come with liquid natural gas. Essentially, the liquid natural gas is evaporated and put into the gas pipeline network, and this produces a high pressure when you evaporate that thing, which could also be recovered by a rotary expander on the basis of free energy, because this pressure is there, and essentially all you have to do is have equipment and get this energy out, which they don't do at this time. But one of the real problem is because if you do the energy, you do electricity essentially, and you need to have this electricity feed into the network. And some of the numbers I have seen in the Los Angeles area is that apparently some utility company at the peak power of the day, they pay up to 30 times the average electric price because they short of peak electricity. And I'm told that some projects could be around storage using quasi-turbine unit, and do not bother with producing the energy relay. Just store energy off-peak and resell it to the utility at the peak. If you have a factor, say 20 or 30 between both, I mean, there is a matter of good business just on this basis.
Uh-huh. What you're describing here in terms of the regaining of the energy from these pressurized pipelines and gases reminds me of regenerative braking in the automobile industry, whereas in the past, the braking energy just was turned into heat and was dissipated into the environment and lost. And now with the hybrid engine technologies, they're converting the braking energy into electricity or into hydraulic energy to be later recovered or turned back into acceleration. And so the vehicles are running much more efficiently because they're recapturing that energy. And what you're doing is you're recapturing the energy that the pipeline industry is using to send the gas along its way, and you're gathering that on the receiving end, so that it's not just lost.
Yes, this is a good point. The difference is related to the storage. Essentially, on a car, the real problem is if your battery is charged and you brake, what do you do with the energy that you recover? I mean, your battery is already charged. So essentially, the regenerative braking will not work. And another point is, In a car, the power of the braking system can easily get to 5,000 horsepower of braking capacity. So if you brake with a car, the power in the wheel is so high that your recovery system will just level a little bit of it and cannot get or recover so much energy.
True with the hydraulic systems. I've had an interview just last week with somebody who has a hydraulic scenario where they recover like 80% of the energy in the braking scenario.
Yes, I agree with you that hydraulic is doing much better. But we're talking about city driving, and essentially, but my point is not about being done or not. I mean, it's good that we do it. The point is about the storage related to it. With the pipeline industry, what is nice is you recover this electricity or this mechanical energy and you feed it on the electric network, And you don't have this storage limitation associated with it.
I guess maybe I'm not quite understanding. Are you saying that... are you saying that you would be using the gas pipeline as the storage mechanism during the off-peak hours and then harness that back during the peak hours by using the quasi-turbine to regain that energy?
No, 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 I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is usually the electric people will be happy to get some extra electricity on their network, because if they get electricity on their network, they will essentially keep the water in the dam, or they will run idle their coal plant, you know. So they will essentially love to get the energy from the gas pipeline pressure. And we don't talk here about just utilities. I mean, a large company may get the gas at its door at 200 psi, and as they consume the gas, 200 psi through a rotary engine can be a substantial amount of power. And you understand that you do not burn this gas. You use the pressure or recover the pressure of the gas. You don't burn it, actually. You just recover the pressure of the gas. And this can be done at consumer or industry user, industrial park area or municipal system as a distributed energy distribution system.
Is that the main application that you're targeting at this time?
At this time, this is one very important. Another one is underground mining industry. They use a lot of compressed air, and they have a lot of engine, and they need a lot of rotary engine for all sorts of drilling equipment and all sorts of application. So the mining industry is very good for this kind of application. This could be also a rotary pump and compressor for freezer and air conditioning. You know that essentially when you use a pinhole expander, what you do is you open the pinhole and you let the gas flow, and it's cooled down on the other side as an air conditioner, for example. When you do that, the kinetic energy of the gas, or the pressure of the gas, flow into it, get cold, but the kinetic energy subtracts some of the cold. So the efficiency is reduced by this fact. If you replace the pinhole into a refrigeration system by a rotary expander, you will remove from the flow, you remove some mechanical energy, the pressure energy from the flow, and you increase the efficiency of cooling. This is also quite interesting. Another point that we target is using essentially a quasi-turbine as a steam engine, because as you may know, steam is not very popular, has been decreasing over time, but one of the reasons is because there is no high-efficiency, small, low-weight steam engine. And the quasi-turbine is a good model of an engine which can run at steam. It can even run in the Stirling mode. And the steam can, one of the great steam application could be the solar energy using concentrator over a small quasi-turbine steam engine. It could even be a nuclear steam machine eventually.
When you say the Stirling mode, you're talking about an external compression or external combustion system where you actually are not losing the gases, but they are heating and cooling in the same system in a closed-loop scenario. Is that what you're describing for the solar industry application, is a closed-loop system?
Yes. The Stirling is is basically a closed loop. In the Stirling, there is no intake and no exhaust. The gas is trapped into the engine. When you turn the engine and you have the chamber, gas goes larger and smaller. Essentially, you give heat or you remove heat from the gas, and this is the way a Stirling engine turns. So it is effectively a closed system. But the steam engine is usually an open operation where you get your boiler on one side and you have the steam flowing through. You can recover the steam and back to the boiler. But the Stirling mode is essentially a trap gas into an engine, yes.
Mm-hmm. And when you were describing the solar application, were you describing the open steam engine or the closed Stirling engine?
It can be both, and it can be both because some installation, a solar steam installation, essentially do produce steam that you can run through a quasi turbine, or you can use a quasi turbine at the focal point of a solar concentrator where you heat it up. But also, what is nice with the quasi turbine design, if somebody like to look at it more carefully on quasiturbine.com, you will notice that you can have a spoon of water into every chamber. There are four chambers, and you put just a spoon of water into it, and you can have two hot pole and two cold pole, and this thing will start to run, basically on the fact that when the water goes on the hot spot, it will essentially vaporize and produce a pressure, and when it gets on the cold spot, it will condense and move on to the next hot spot. So in this sense, the Stirling is usually a machine where you only have a gaseous state, but the quasi turbine can also work in the Stirling having a Rankine essentially mode of working, which is using a fluid which change phases and goes from liquid to gaseous and liquid again.
Okay. Now, I know we've had interviewed on this show before some people that are using the air compressor, compressed air type of engine, and one in particular is Angelo Di Pietro over in Australia, engineer, and it's so efficient in terms of the conversion of the compressed air to rotation power that the size of an engine that would run a car, he holds it in his hands. It's, you know, less than 100 pounds, an engine that would do the same job as this large, bulky engine that is presently in an automobile. Do you have a similar efficiency in terms of the size of the engine that does the same job as a internal combustion engine, the typical piston engine?
Yes, it does. But essentially, Mr. Angelo engine has one cycle per revolution. In the quasi turbine, you have two. I mean, four blades. And each machine, you get two. In the quasi turbine, you get four essentially blades. So, in terms of power density, the quasi turbine, I'm not here opening an argument, but the quasi turbine is essentially basically twice as more compact for the same power. So, in terms of power density, Mr. Angelo engine is impressive, and the quasi turbine is also. The point is, if you want to make a total engine, an engine which do it all, I mean, you can, in this case, you cannot access from an outside source of pressure. If you have access to an outside source of pressure, like the air conversion, you have a tremendous power density, but you don't produce the power into your engine. You just essentially transform the power into the engine, into mechanical work. If you produce the power by combustion, for example, into your machine, your motor, the power density go down, It's not as impressive, but it's still, at least for the quasi-turbine, it's still a factor 5 compared to a piston engine. And there is no magic for that, because in the piston engine, your piston is burning when it goes from the top to the bottom. So in the burning stroke, it's going down and producing power. But it's not producing power during exhaust stroke, it's not producing power during intake strokes, and not during compression stroke. The power output you produce with a conventional piston is 17% of the time. When you get to the quasi-turbine, the time that the quasi-turbine is producing stroke is a powerful stroke, and actual push onto the engine is 100% of the time. The Wankel is about 270 degrees over 360 degrees. So the Wankel is a little less in term of stroke continuity. This, if you allow me, gets you to one point, is that in a piston engine, because you fire and you have propulsion 17% of the time, that means that you have peak power that is 7 times the average power. So if you have a piston engine, the actual stress into your piston system is 7 times the average power stress of the whole engine. In the quasi-turbine, the stress of the strokes, because they are 100% productive, is about within 20% of the average stress of the engine. And this leads to a very interesting point in term of construction, because all proportion keep it, the quasi-turbine can be, say, 7 or 6 times less robust than the piston engine for the same average power.
What kind of, are there limitations to the RPM in terms of when you get to larger speeds, you're getting centripetal forces? How would the quasi-turbine compare to the piston engine?
It's interesting because piston engine, people do not realize that you push the piston away and you stop it and you call it back. And in this process, you stop the piston at the bottom and at the top. And this is where you stop the piston that you stop the ring. And this is where you get most wear of the material of the rings of the cylinder, is where you stop the rings. In a rotary engine, you never stop the motion. And people do not realize sometimes that the ring and the seals into a rotary engine are some kind of a floating type of things. They surf into the engine more, and they never stop. And the real question is, the limitations mostly apply to piston engine in this term, because you throw the piston away and you call it back, and you do that on an oscillating movement. And you know that people can do this oscillation movement with the piston at 10,000 times a minute, and there is no point that a rotary engine cannot achieve similarly. And most of the time, the rotary engine is more compact in term of size, which means that all those questions of centrifugal force and pushing the piston away and calling back, it's less severe in term of mechanics. But still, there are limits, and one of the limits is the sound of the speed of sound into the air. And a small quasi-turbine, for example, 5 inches in diameter, if you run it at 33,000 RPM, the tangential area, parts of the quasi-turbine will be exactly at the sound of speed, which is no good. And usually you divide the sound of speed by 10. So 33,000, you divide by 10, you are at 3,000 RPM. So applying just this rule, you could say that in the case of the quasi-turbine, a small unit, 3,000 RPM is a fairly standard operating condition, which may not look high to you, but it's a high torque machine. So a high torque machine like a tractor do not need to to turn at high RPM. They produce their power in terms of torque, more in terms of RPM.
And so you are getting good torque at low RPMs in this quasi-turbine?
Yes. Oh, yes. This is the point. And if you look at the quasi turbine that we call the QT 5 liter, it's a 5 liter engine. If you compare with a car, say they have a 5 liter engine is like a Corvette type of engine, and the quasi turbine at this power is only 16 inches in diameter by 5 inches thick. So this is a small thing. And what is interesting is the torque is high. And on the highway, the wheel of a car is typically turning between 800 to 1100 RPM. So if you have an engine with high torque, you don't even need the gearbox feed. You can design the engine and match it for direct drive, providing that your engine is able to provide enough torque. Most of the time, piston engines are not producing good sustained torque, and we get back to this reason is because the piston is productive in terms of torque only 17% of the time. So the rest of the time, the piston is just dragging within a piston engine. And this is the reason the torque is not as good, and this is the reason we need to run the engine at 2,000, 3,000 RPM in order to get 800 RPM at the wheel.
Now, in terms of when you talk about using this in a vehicle application, when do you anticipate seeing the quasi-turbine integrated into a vehicle?
Interesting question. You know, Mr. Wankel started to work on this Wankel engine in 1926. He got the engine running for less than a minute in 57. It took him 31 years. And then it took him another 10 to 20 years to put it in a car. And by 1976, everybody told him it's not a great engine to put in a car. But essentially, it takes time. The car industry do not necessarily welcome new technology fast. And I don't think either it's a good place to start. I mean, stationary projects, like we do with pipeline and other mining industry and all that, they really much better to start and to make a new technology emerge. One of the reasons is service that the technician can provide to the machine. As you have first you have pre-commercial units, you may want the technician to come and to put some oil into it every 2 weeks or things like that. You cannot ask a car owner to put oil somewhere in every 2 weeks. I mean, you need to package your thing for 10 years. So I don't think mobility is really the. But this said, something interesting is that we talk about the small quasi turbine to recover heat. Because you can heat the whole thing and you can have it run. This is a good technology to recover the heat of a conventional engine, because the conventional engine, about one-third of the power is out in terms of exhaust heat. And a quasi-turbine can be essentially put into the flow of exhaust and be heated and run as a steam engine based on the exhaust heat of conventional engine. I don't think it has been yet done, but this is one of the great application. Not again for car, but I would say it's more interesting for locomotive, for boats. A locomotive crossing United States will run for 4, 5, 6 days without essentially stopping the engine. So this kind of almost stationary application for steam engine is great. And if you make calculation, there is a guy, Mr. Carol Chrome, who made a white paper on our website about using a quasi-turbine to recover the heat from a conventional car. And his calculation showed that if you do that, you exceed the efficiency of most hybrid cars today. It's not easy to do. It's problematic, but there is energy there. And someone who could work on that, it's could eventually get a supplement of mechanical energy to add to his propulsion.
Mm-hmm. What other markets are you targeting with the quasi-turbine at this time?
I mean, at this time, you know, pneumatic and steam is really, and heat recovery and rotary expander, like in pipeline or like in the cooling system, it's refrigeration system. We have plenty, plenty to do with that.
You mentioned solar earlier. Is that something that you're pursuing actively?
Yes. The interest in solar for this machine is great, but you understand that essentially at this point we ourselves essentially limit our role as an engine manufacturer, and we're not integrating engine into system. We never did ourselves a car or a go-kart or a steam device. I mean, all we do essentially is we work on the engine and we supply the engine. Solar is very, very interesting, and a lot of people are considering the quasi-turbine for solar project. We will not ourselves, I don't think, in this this time. We are so busy now. We will not ourselves do the project. Heat recovery is also related to steam and to solar, and like geothermal energy and all that. It uses essentially basically the same quasi-turbine device.
Mm-hmm. Where are you in terms of cranking these out commercially for sale?
This question is interesting. You probably look over the year the solar industry, the windmill industry, the fuel cell industry, the hybrid car industry. Can you pinpoint the time when they became commercial? I mean, you know, they have been working on fuel cells and talking about fuel cells for 50 years. And still today, not everybody really can easily manage to get and run a fuel cell system in their garage. But still there is fuel cell potential for sure. Quasi-turbine is about 10 to 12 years old technology. That's not much in this industry. And already we have pre-commercial good machine running on air and steam and rotary expander. And we could just at this time and maybe for a few years stay on that and just make the company more robust and eventually see if we do ourselves more. But interest may come by people interested getting into mobility like the car industry, and we certainly will support those people willing to do project there.
Uh-huh. That's very good. Now, what about the business end of your company? Do you accept funding or investments? How does that work?
Up to now, we did not. Up to now, it's essentially basically a family business, and we essentially what is our strategy on that is that. We want to take the risk out of the public investment the most we can. So basically, we support the risk, and we like to deal with investor maybe within a year or two. But at this time, we have no outside investor in this project, and we will be looking more for development type of money that. Risk money related to this technology, and we are in good way through. I think we got a good support from the American Association of Mechanical Engineers.
that I've been publishing a technical paper on this technology. In Germany, a major engine analyst and publisher, I've done a good work related to this technology, and I think it's a matter now of just wait and see who is going to get involved in the coming years.
Now, we've talked quite a bit about the Wankel engine, and this is not a Wankel. It's similar to the Wankel, probably closest to the Wankel of any other. And we've talked about some differences. Maybe we could talk just a little bit more about the differences between the quasi-turbine and the Wankel engine.
Okay. The Wankel basically uses a crankshaft. This is again, the point related to the theory of engine is if you use a crankshaft, you're down to 2 degrees of freedom, which the quasi-turbine don't do. There is no eccentric crankshaft into the quasi-turbine. Basically, another problem of the Wankel is the Wankel uses a triangle piston. The center moving parts is a triangle piston assembled onto the crankshaft. And this has essentially two problems, is that as the crankshaft turns, this massive triangle piston turns also. And this is an unbalanced system. So it's vibrate. So in order to make a Wankel engine with no vibration, you need to use another rotor, which is out of phase with this one, with the first one, and essentially the vibration will cancel out. But in a mechanical system, when you cancel out the vibration, essentially you increase the internal stress. And this has been in the past one of the problems with the Wankel. The internal stress is so great in this engine that after a few years, it starts to show some, I mean, in the past, at least, was not perfectly solved. The quasi-turbine has a balanced rotor. So there is no interest when you design an engine with a quasi-turbine, there is no interest to have two stages. Like with the Wankel, they need two stages to cancel out the vibration. Basically, also is the quasi-turbine uses a four-side rotor, while the Wankel uses a three-side rotor. And one of the dilemma of the Wankel engine is that they want to do a four-stroke engine with a three-side rotor. And this is not easy to do, and the only way you can do that is by accepting a very great overlap of the exhaust stroke with the intake stroke. And this overlap is really not good. And this has been the Wankel efficiency problem in many regards. So in the quasi-turbine, you have four phases rotor, and you make a four-stroke engine. So there is no overlap at all. It's a very, very big difference. Also, into the Wankel, you need a synchronization gear. And this gear is to make sure that your rotor is synchronized with the rotation of the system of the crankshaft and of the crankshaft. In the quasi-turbine, there is no gear. There is no synchronization mechanism. So this is also a big difference. And finally, one of the reasons the Wankel cannot be used, for example, easily for steam or for other application is because there are dead times into the Wankel, just like into the piston. If you want to use steam to run a piston engine, you need to have a valve on the top, and you need to intake the steam at the right time at top dead center, and you need to close this valve at the bottom center. So the Wankel is like this. I mean, there are dead times. So you need to have such a valve when you are at top dead center, you open the valve. When you get at bottom dead center, you close the valve, and you wait until the next top dead center occurs. In the quasi-turbine, there is no valve. It's a continuous flow because one the four sides of the four strokes just move around, and once you go over at the end of one stroke, start the other stroke immediately. And this makes a big difference between the quasi turbine and the Wanko.
Thank you very much for giving these explanations. We are out of our time today. We have been speaking with Gilles St. Hilaire from Quasi Turbine, and his website is quasiturbine.com. And we do have coverage at PezWiki about their system as well, and you can read more about it there. This has been the Free Energy Now radio show. Sterling Allen, your host. Thank you for joining us, and come again next week.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.